Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It is the 23rd of April. It is 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have a terrific panel. Let me introduce you to them. Just a programming note that Governor Andrew Cuomo will be joining Alan coming up at 10 o'clock, straight up at 10. So we have about 47 minutes to get into all the issues of the day. So we will get going. Let me introduce our panel. Libby Post is here, a political consultant. Good morning, Libby. How
good
are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
J.P. Miller joins us. He is the Empire Report, the wonderful news source that is the Empire Report. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike Spain is with us. Mike is the former Times Union associate editor, longtime journalist, and a dear friend. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
And Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's very own, who will be interviewing the governor at 10 o'clock. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. And more important is those tickets to the Pete Seeger concert are going. They're going fast. I want to remind everybody it's going to be a wonderful evening. We're all going to be singing together. It'll be wonderful. Probably the greatest interpreter of Pete's songs, a very good friend of his, Happy Traum, who's a wonderful man. We'll be interviewing him next week. Is going to be doing the singing. My friend Joe Brody and his wife Sue and Ann Erickson of our board just wrote me last night saying, "Is it too late to get in on it?" No, it is, but you got to do it now. So 1-800, what is it? 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. Get those tickets because it's going to be a lot of fun.
Isn't that number tattooed on your arm?
It is. And as Joe will tell you and as Libby will tell you, and we all go into our classrooms to teach, and we've been so used to interspersing that phone number with what we're saying that in the middle of talking about Plessy versus Ferguson, we say 1-800-323-9263.
Joe always gets the phones ringing when you talk about Plessy versus Ferguson. Well, good. All right. So 1-800-323-9262, and tickets are happening. So do that. We will get started. Let us begin with the story on Sri Lanka. We know a little bit more than we knew yesterday. One of the things that we know is that Sri Lanka was warned of possible attacks. The question now is, why didn't they stop them? The confidential security memo laid it all out: names, addresses, phone numbers, even the times in the middle of the night that one suspect would visit his wife. In the days leading up to Easter Sunday's devastating suicide bombings that killed at least 321 people in Sri Lanka, the country's security agencies had been closely watching the secretive cell, a little-known radical Islamic organization that security officials in Sri Lanka now say carried out the attacks and may have received help from abroad. They knew the group was dangerous. They had collected intelligence on the whereabouts of its leader in the April 11 security memo, which warned of Catholic Church bombings. They had been warned even earlier by India that the group, also known by the spelling National Tawheed Jamaath, I believe, it's T-H-O-W-H-E-E-D, J-M-A apostrophe A-T-H, plotting the church attacks. They knew as far back as January that radical Islamists possibly tied to the group had stockpiled weapons and detonators. Also, we learned from the New York Times this morning that ISIS claims responsibility for the Sri Lanka bombings. The Islamic State called the bombers its fighters, as a government official claimed that the attacks were payback for attacks at New Zealand mosques. That's what we know as of this morning, as well as the first funerals being held as well.
Well, one of the troubling things about that story today in the New York Times was that apparently Sri Lanka's president and the prime minister there have been feuding for months, and they don't communicate to each other. And so while the prime minister was getting while the president was getting information, the prime minister was excluded from these briefings, and it sounded a little like the CIA and the FBI and the way they wouldn't share information. This was all brought out in the 9/11 report, you know, leading that was done afterwards, looking what went wrong for the September 11th attacks in the U.S. And it just shows how you can have the most sophisticated surveillance. You can have a great data given to you by a larger power. I mean, if India had it, I'll bet the U.S. probably was part of collecting it. And if if people just don't get over these personality clashes and these political clashes, bad things can happen. And that's what makes this more painful, a tragedy.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the tragic part of this, as you have just mentioned, Mike, is that if it just happened, if nobody knew, that would be one thing. But in this case, the fact that all this information, including names, dates,
phone numbers
were all there, that means 324 people now, and probably more, 324 people are dead, including a whole bunch of Americans. Not that Americans come first, but this is extraordinary.
It is. It's also, I mean, as you were saying, Mike, I mean, it also shows that with this polarization in politics and people not wanting to talk to each other and the overall just freezing of both sides, that it can lead to things like this, where people are not communicating with one another, which seems very, very dangerous.
You know, you think about justice and going through the courts as opposed to police killing suspects. Remember when the brothers did the the Boston bombing?
America, yeah.
One wonders whether or not there is a penchant for saying we just are growing impatient with going through the judicial process. Now, there's no way to prove it, but we do know that police officers quite frequently can use their guns. We see that in the killings of young black men. We see it in other places, and that is quite troubling.
Well, this was the opposite. Rather than abusing their power and going after people without just cause, they had just cause to take action, and they did not.
No, I'm not talking about that, Mike. You're quite right. But I'm just simply saying, I've been thinking lately about who, when suspects are confronted, what happens to them. Do they get held over for the court, or are there some people who are a little bit, and it has nothing to do, you're quite right, Mike, with any of that. It just has to do with, I've been thinking lately about why people shoot their guns, why cops do that.
The other question that has arisen from this is this manufactured internationally, or was this homegrown in Sri Lanka? And if it is international, are international terrorist groups targeting countries like Sri Lanka that are poor and don't have as good intelligence infrastructure as westernized countries to carry out their attacks? Because whether they carry out their attack in Sri Lanka or in a bigger country or city, that they're still going to get the intended reaction, which is they want to instill fear and intimidation through, you know, broadcasting of this attack in the media. Did they target Sri Lanka because of their weak defenses?
Could be. Well, we certainly know that the international parts of ISIS are taking credit for it. But taking credit for it doesn't mean they did it. It just means they're taking credit for it. So it's awful no matter how you add it up. A human life is a human life. In order to understand that perspective, because we get jaded sometimes, just imagine it was somebody in your family.
Well, there was, I think, somebody from Norway, I think it was, lost three of his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of this is absolutely horrible, but we have to go back to the fact that this was a political feud.
Right. A political feud.
Mm-hmm. I would call it something else, but I don't think I could say it on the air.
right.
You know, between two... elected officials, ostensibly, and over 300 people are dead because they let their power and their politics go to their head instead of doing what's right for the people of their country.
And now
that's an indictment in itself.
Right. And now they're making up excuses.
Yeah, yeah.
So now it's...
Because somebody else did
something to us.
Right.
Now, this is a country, Sri Lanka, in which the Muslim population is quite small.
Right.
So the idea that you would go there to make up for something that had happened in another place is quite troubling.
And it's been rife with civil unrest for a very, very long time. It had a very long civil war. And you even have Buddhists being violent, which I thought was totally anathema.
Right.
You know, I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
When I looked at the map of Sri Lanka, and I don't know, because I've always had cartography problems, but it looks huge.
Map challenge.
It looks huge, and I don't know if that's just because of the way it compared, you know, it's on the tip of India, over to the right side, depending on how you're looking at it. It looks quite large, but the population is very small to the point where our losses in 9/11 are the same magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
This
is their 9/11,
right?
And I share JP's worry that, you know, if international groups are behind it, as ISIS claims it was, and that I'm skeptical about that because I don't think ISIS really is in too organized a shape right now. But if it was international terrorists that were involved in setting it up, are they going to identify weaker places where this kind of terrorism can be pulled off more easily than in more populated areas?
Sri Lanka is the size of you could put Sri Lanka in eastern New York.
Yeah. Really? Not that big.
You could fit it in to go down to the city up to Burlington.
Wow.
And then it would go about as far as Springfield out to Utica.
How did you do that, Joe? That's a magnificent effort.
It's
can I see that?
Sure. It's such a good visual on the radio, I must say.
So it's about the size of Massachusetts and Connecticut.
Yeah, that's basically it. If you put Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and a little bit of Connecticut, you would have Sri Lanka. But you're right. I mean, it's a large. There's a lot of people there. And it is a tragedy, and of course now is the funerals. What about the ISIS connection of what we know and what we've been told about the defeating of ISIS and so forth, and now ISIS coming back? And
well, Richard Engel, I saw him over the weekend on
NBC News,
on NBC News talking
talking to
former ISIS members in Afghanistan, I think, and they're just waiting for some new organization to come and pick them up.
I saw that interview.
Right, and that they're, you know, while the Taliban wasn't their first choice, they might end up there.
Right. They just look at themselves as free terrorist agents, and even though they're being held in some kind of a prison camp, they know they'll eventually get out, and they're just looking for the next gig.
Right. it was very, very clear.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to some other stories. Again, we have the governor coming in at 10 o'clock this morning, so we want to get a lot of stuff together. We were talking yesterday about impeachment, and we did mention at that time that the Democrats would be having a conference call with Nancy Pelosi to discuss this. What we now know is that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told lawmakers that there are no plans to immediately open impeachment proceedings against President Trump, rejecting calls from several Democrats to initiate steps to try to oust the president. In a rare Monday night conference call, the California Democrats stressed that the near-term strategy in the wake of the special counsel Robert Mueller's report is to focus on investigating the president and seeing where the inquiries lead. Members of Pelosi's leadership team reaffirmed her cautious approach, according to four officials in the call, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss private conversations. We have to save our democracy. This isn't about Democrats or Republicans. It's about saving our democracy, said Nancy Pelosi.
So here's a letter from Scott in Gardner, critical of me, to Mr. Shartak's comment earlier this morning. For years, Democrats have been decrying Republicans for placing party over country by deciding that doing nothing about Trump would improve the party's chances of winning the next election. So how is passing on impeachment proceedings in the House any different? Isn't that applying the same calculus? And that's from Scott and Gardner. I would respond to that and say, I'm not opposed to impeachment, but I'm only for impeachment when you're going to impeach him. And I also understand that so many people are talking about getting things done. They want higher education reform. They want health reform. They want this and that. You won't get that if the House impeaches, scratches the itch, draws blood, and then the Senate does what we know they're going to do, which is to say no. And then what happens? At what point will we understand that you can get all the facts, get Nadler, get all the facts, get Richie Neal to get all the facts, who I'll be talking to today on the air later, and you'll see that it makes sense to go slow and to win the war, not to just satisfy yourself.
That's assuming that it's a war. I mean, you know, what the war is for. Is the war Democrats versus Republicans, or is it democracy versus something else?
I'll take either for 2 points.
It's about making sure we take back the White House and the Senate. The Democrats.
No. Okay.
Well, just for the record, you're saying we. But it's not everybody in this room.
The royal we.
Yeah, so I voted for many Republicans.
Right. That we take back the House. That we take back the White House and we take back the Senate. And that, you know, is more important than this short term, you know, off with his head.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to. And I said this yesterday. There's a political calculus here that we have to be cognizant of, and what our biggest goal is to take all this stuff back from these people who are stonewalling any kind of progress on any issue whatsoever. I mean, even, you know, McConnell said if Trump loses in 2020 and he's still the head of the Senate, he's going to stonewall everything. He's not going to let anything go through. That's not governing. That's a coup d'etat.
Well, but yeah, I mean, it's no different than what he did.
Paul writes.
Yes, but they did get some stuff done.
Paul writes, as much as I want to see Donald Trump be publicly sent packing, I believe impeachment would be the wrong course. Much better to focus on next year's election, reward him with an enormous defeat at the polls. Impeachment only allows him to proclaim himself a martyr of some sort. Thanks and have a good day. And that's Paul from North Adams.
JP.
I have a little bit of a interesting take on it. I think why not pass articles of impeachment very quickly and then they can have it behind them? Why wouldn't the House pass those articles of impeachment in the next 2 weeks? I imagine that they could get all the votes and then this impeachment discussion won't be, if they don't impeach, this impeachment discussion is going to be prolonged throughout next year into the summer. Everybody's going to be talking about impeachment through next summer. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris comes out yesterday and talks about how if she's elected president, she will do executive orders on gun control. Elizabeth Warren comes out and talks about wiping out $1.5 trillion in student debt, and neither of them are getting the coverage that is the Trump circus. Why not pass articles of impeachment really quickly and have it behind them?
You're forgetting about McConnell. McConnell can schedule as he likes.
Nothing to do about McConnell.
No,
you just pass the Senate impeachment.
So they pass it. The Senate takes it up right away and votes it down, and that's the end of that.
That's the end of that, and that issue then is behind the Democrats.
Well, just Mr. Political Scientist, Dr. Political Scientist.
We only have 20 seconds. Do you want to hold till after the break?
Well, sure.
Just remember some important details
about how impeachment works.
Okay, so save that thought. We will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Libby Post. The governor's coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. We will be back right after this short break. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have letters from you all, which we'll get to in just a second. We also, don't forget, have the governor coming up at 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Libby Post. And Mike, you were just about to ask the political scientist in the room a question.
Where?
All right. If the House of Representatives does rapidly or at one point vote for articles of impeachment, then what must happen under the Constitution,
right,
Dr. Chartok?
Well, then you get a Senate trial and you get prosecutors from the House of Representatives who represent the House. That's what happened with Clinton. And I believe that Lindsey Graham was one of the prosecutors when he was in the House.
He was the congressman at the time who prosecuted Clinton. Okay,
That's right. Now, the question I have, which smarter political scientists than I would have to figure out, which is, what is the timetable? In other words, how much time does McConnell have to hold the trial? I don't agree, even though I have incredible respect for JP and his cousin PJ. I have to say I don't agree with him. I don't think we can get it behind you. I think it's jujitsu. You let it work for you. You let the mass of the other thing work for you. Mm-hmm. But in any case, you can be sure McConnell will play with everything he can, like he did with the appointment of Gorsuch.
And Kavanaugh.
And, yeah. So there you are.
Okay.
Christopher Robin writes to us, could the Democrats be saving impeachment hearings while Grumpf is on the road in summer of 2020? It would dog him right through the campaign without ever hitting the Senate. Well, that's one way of putting it, but I don't think that's what they're thinking about. I think they think if it would just wait a while, all of the facts will come out before Nadler, Richie Neal will get the tax returns or not, and they'll have plenty to work with. And that's why I think they're doing what they're doing, and I approve of that for whatever it's worth.
Well, the question is whether, to me, is whether if the impeachment is underway in the spring of 2020, whether that will become the rallying cry that will effectively get people to vote Republican to keep Senate, you know, don't let the Democrats take
rob
away your democracy, rob the democracy.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. And that could backfire. If you were trying to preserve the democracy, it could actually hurt the democracy. Mm-hmm.
And we have heard from Peter R., who writes, interesting article in Politico this morning about the damage Trump, Pompeo, Kushner, Bolton is doing in the Middle East and are tying the hands of any successor from working towards peace in the future. Israel, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Iran, always a difficult area to try to resolve issues diplomatically and peacefully. It appears we now have an administration purposely working to make things worse. Please get into this topic at some point. Well, you have. You've just made your point. And then we've heard from Travis. I agree with Pelosi. Vote the man out of office. Uses corruption and incompetence as a campaign topic. And that's from Yuma in Vermont. I agree with Yuma, of course, but there are a lot of people who don't agree. I think, what is it? What percentage? I was looking at the polling this morning. About a third of the country wants impeachment. And that's less than the half that are Democrats.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think people understand the challenge of all of this and the damage it could do.
And then we heard from Mike, who says Nancy Pelosi has figured it out. She counted votes in the Senate, and she knows there are not 20 Republicans who would vote to remove Donald Trump, assuming all 47 Democrats voted to convict. Republicans have shown no, capital letters, inclination to stand up to Donald Trump. They got their tax cut, they're getting their judges, and they're content to let Donald Trump go unchecked. It does no good to impeach if you can't convict. There is a historical maxim that I believe in. If you aim at the king, you better kill him. Look what's happened after Clinton's impeachment and Senate trial. Clinton left with a 60% approval rating, Mike, in Glens Falls.
And there was a budget surplus, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Last time
it did not hurt either.
It's the economy, stupid.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Most people are saying in the latest poll that Alan was referencing a moment ago that as Trump's popularity is at its lowest, the interest in impeachment is also waning, and is at a low.
The question is, confronted with the facts that are in the Mueller report and the upcoming testimony of people like Don McCann, the former attorney for President Trump, et cetera, et cetera, with all that information coming out, it's up to the American people to decide whether they want to impeach or remedy the situation by an election, which it could also be an effective way.
That's the best impeachment.
Don't get me wrong. I understand people's lust for impeachment. This is a very bad man, this Trump. And I'd love to see him out of there, too. But I don't think it makes any sense to do it if you can't really get rid of him. It just doesn't.
Because you play that card, right? I mean, let's say he gets reelected, and then the House is still where it is now, the Senate is still where it is now, then you would want that later, right?
Well, what happens if you miss your chance and he gets reelected and the Republicans take over both houses of Congress?
Uh-huh.
And you missed your chance,
uh-huh,
and it's a double, triple cross.
JP or PJ, whoever you are.
The evil twin speaking.
I don't get that. If you missed your chance, they have no chance. Don't you get that?
Well, arguably the second chance would be the election.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They will have blown it as under JP's scenario, right?
Yeah. Well, right. But
I don't think so.
But if you know everything you know now and you put it before the American people and they still say, yeah, we still want him to be president, then...
That is the bed you make for yourself.
Right. Yeah, right. That is democracy.
And what I would also say is, you know, so this shows that he is, you know, a lying, cheating, thieving, bad dude. The American people knew all that in 2016.
I agree.
When they elected him.
Yes, I agree. I think people knew that. And that's why the Mueller report isn't as shocking, because a lot of all this had come out in the news media.
In the open.
Right. Yeah, and it's just that people were willing to, some people were willing to shrug and say, well, you know, it's politics.
And there's another backfire here. If they impeach and there's a trial and Mitch McConnell rushes a trial through, and of course, then he is not thrown out of office and not convicted, it'll become another rally guy. Totally exonerated by the Congress, you know, and you know, you don't need to provide more ammunition for that narrative, which is a false narrative.
And here comes from Dave in Granville. Come on, the Democratic turnout in 2018 was driven by angry voters demanding action against this lawless administration. So what does Pelosi do? After years of feckless, timid cowering under GOP assault, the entrenched ancient regime Dem leadership shows the Lucy football to its base? This is why people hate the Democratic establishment and voted for new blood in 2018. They stand for nothing and will fight for nothing, and that's Dave from Granville. Well, as you know, I don't agree with that, but hey, your letter, we read it. And then Greg in New Paltz. Continuing to investigate Trump and expose his crimes as much of America as possible, you know they'll find even more dirt. If they get to impeachment, they'll have the opportunity to expose how the Republican Senate will side with the vote, its possible path to reclaiming the Senate if it all moves fast enough. Well, yes, I hear you. I mean, that's one thing you can say that I think that the Republicans in the United States Senate are screwed. Because if they say we won't vote for impeachment when the American people are clamoring for impeachment,
but they're not only a third of the country wants.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. But if in fact that's what happens, the Republicans look bad under any scenario. If they voted for it, if they didn't vote for it, if they held it off, I don't think they look good. And I don't think, if I were a Republican senator in the United States Senate now, I don't know what I'd be doing, especially in the purple states. Panel, in the discussion about impeachment, the assumption is that no one in the Senate is going to move from their current position. Who is talking to Republican members and has some sense of what might make them decide Trump is no longer their ticket to reelection? Change never seems to be possible until all of a sudden it does, and that's John in New Hampshire.
I think that the one thing that could get Republican senators to peel and vote for impeachment actually has nothing to do with Mueller or the actual crimes. It's if the economy starts to tank. That's Trump's real weakness. You remember when the stock market went down at the end of last year?
Yeah.
This guy cannot withstand a soft economy. And that's where you'd see Republican senators peel off.
The danger there, of course, is that you never want to see a position where the Democrats are seen as hoping for a lesser economy.
Right.
That won't be good for them. And we also heard from Carolyn, who said, I'm kind of getting tired of hearing about the political calculus around impeachment, but I also wonder if that calculus hasn't been wrong. In fact, 2 years after President Nixon resigned, a Democrat took the White House and Democrats hold the House and Senate. 2 years after the failed impeachment of President Clinton, a Republican took the House and Republicans were considered stronger, taking the House and Senate not long after. Not impeaching has many risks, but looking weak may be the biggest. I agree with taking time to do the process and bring the public along. But I also agree with Senator Warren about requiring every legislator to put a vote on the record. And that's Carolyn from Albany. A lot in there.
Well, there's a lot in there.
Including the comparison to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was a different story. Mm-hmm. Richard Nixon, you had the tapes on the tapes.
Well, let's say there's more compelling evidence comes out in these House of Representatives hearings, you know, with Jerry Nadler, et cetera. And the American public is confronted with more compelling evidence. could that begin to peel away some Republicans, like it has apparently for Mitt Romney, who are disgusted by the behavior of the president?
Mitt Romney never liked him anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Mitt didn't vote for him. I don't think that any Republican or anybody, forget about Republican, anyone that pulled the lever for Donald Trump in 2016 reads this Mueller report and said, gee, this is a bunch, who knew that this guy was such a bad guy? Maybe I voted for the wrong guy. Like, I don't think anybody did that.
It's not showing any desertion among Republican rank and file, that's for sure, right now. Not only that, but I have great respect for you, JP, because didn't you work for Mitt Romney at some point?
At some point, yes, I did.
So you really do know his thinking and his mind.
I worked for him for a long time, yes.
Yeah. There you go. It's nice to know that, so people can have a sense of what you're saying. Neil says, you have discussed the cons of impeachment persuasively, and I agree with your arguments. However, there are two reasons to impeach him with no chance of the Senate convicting. First, to demonstrate that no one is above the law. Second, to get Senate Republicans on record as supporting an utterly corrupt regime. Not that these only apply if a significant majority of voters are note that these only apply if a significant majority of voters are in favor of impeachment. Well, we know that that ain't true right now.
I thought that was – that's the best argument that was it Neil, you said, the name of the writer? But I thought that was – right. It would hold the Republicans who do not vote in the face of all that evidence accountable for their vote. That's about it.
Good morning, panel, says John. An impeachment is not voided by failure of the Senate to vote for expulsion of the president. In his political calculations, Democrats have become complicit with Republicans in making this appallingly corrupt administration an acceptable model for a U.S. presidency. A full impeachment by the House with a full case stated must stand in the historical record for generations to come, even if a Republican Senate fails to convict. Unfortunately, we no longer have a choice but to impeach. Ladies and gentlemen, when Dadley gets through with them, when Richie Neal gets through with them, there's going to be a historical record.
I kind of agree with that letter, though. You know, when people think about Clinton, people remember that he was impeached. You don't. The first thing you didn't think about isn't, oh, he passed the balanced budget amendment or he did, you know, assault weapons ban. You think of what happened in 1998. He was impeached.
I see.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue, and we have a couple more topics to get to. The governor will be on at 10 o'clock. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and Libby Post. We have letters, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. Go ahead.
All right. Good morning, panel. JP is right. You can get impeachment in the House today. Then the Republican Senate has to go on record before the November election saying they support all the obstructionist things he clearly did. Remember, 2020 is not just about Trump. Have to flip the Senate, so you need to gotcha moments for all those senators to campaign around. Not a lust, unquote, for impeachment. It's strategic. You don't intend to knock him off now. And that's from John, who also is a JD MBA. I thought I'd mention that.
All right.
Okay. And Brian says, I hear your arguments that impeachment could backfire, but what about the argument that not impeaching sets a terrible precedent for future administrations that commit bad, in other words, impeachable acts unchallenged by congressional oversight? Brian and Wendell. And Catherine says, dear panel, the whole impeachment issue is very complex and difficult to parse. There are many factors at work and much is at risk. Whether impeachment happens or not, it seems we tend to agree Trump should be impeached, but there's no way to do it in the meantime unless we send some kind of message of disapproval. By the way, I think you may have mentioned somebody did yesterday. How about a nice censure from the House of Representatives? This is not neutral, but giving our okay to Trump's behavior. What about censure? Catherine ends the article with. I'm all for that.
Well, what about the House brokering a deal with the Senate to say, we won't impeach him if you censure him? He'll go along on a censure for his outrageous efforts to block the investigation by Mueller. Obviously, that was documented.
Hey, Mikey, you think all those people who are writing us right now are going to sit still for that? Forget it. They
won't.
Well,
if the Senate, well, it would give the Republicans a chance to weigh in.
Yeah, right. Okay, well. Okay, Robin wants to know why treason is not being explored. Trump invited foreign interference in our election, then denied his own intelligence agency's reports on their interference in our election. He's done nothing to protect future elections. He has also changed sanctions against foreign adversaries. When do we call it what it is? And that's from Robin.
I mean, one would think that if impeachment is hard, that treason would probably be a little difficult too. Thinking about that. Yeah. All right. Let's go to Don McGann and the subpoena while we're on the topic of getting to the bottom of things. The Democratic chairman of the House Judiciary Committee issued a subpoena Monday ordering former White House counsel Don McGann to testify before the panel next month and hand over documents and records pertaining to the federal investigation of President Trump, his finances, his campaign, and charges that he sought to obstruct justice. The special counsel's report, even in redacted form, outlines a substantial evidence that President Trump engaged in obstruction and other abuses, according to Representative Gerald Nadler.
Well, McGann is becoming a sort of national hero right now, and I'm thinking about something. Well, and I don't know that that's deserved because, after all, he saved the country from Mueller being fired. But at the same time, he saved Trump. So this is a sort of double-edged sword. But I think McGann now being attacked vigorously by this president, of course, a la Cohn and everybody else, would like to come and testify. So if I'm him, what I'm saying is, okay, but you have to subpoena me so it looks like I'm not doing this voluntarily.
A hostile witness. But you're right. You think about it. Nadler is brilliant here. If McCann appears before his committee on a national, you know, stage, you know, it'll be broadcast live, and he comes across as reasonable, credible, having details from his notes that he kept that the president derides him for having taken. You know,
right.
Roy Cohn never took notes.
Right? When I read that, I
and Roy Cohn and Roy Cohn was disbarred, by the way.
Yes, right. For not taking notes, among other things.
Anyway, if he comes across as a credible witness, will he be the John Dean of this whole thing? Mm-hmm. You know, which kind
well
of turned
be.
The.
I agree with you, yes. Libby.
I'm not sure though that McGann is going to be as forthcoming as Michael Cohen was. Michael Cohen was under criminal prosecution, and so he was highly motivated to dump out all the dirt on Trump. If Don McGann wants to continue a career in Republican politics, for him to go and violate attorney-client privilege and put out all the nasty goods on Trump, I think it's hard to imagine that he's going to do that. I think that he will be more circumspect in his responses than Michael Cohen was.
JP, too late.
He's going to write a book, and then he'll be a new pundit on, you know, CNN or...
Think of the chutzpah
somewhere
of Trump. You know, first his 10-year or 12-year lawyer, who's at his side every moment, goes rogue on him.
Right.
What'd you say? His fixer.
He'd take a bullet. Yeah,
his fixer. He goes rogue, and Trump attacks him with everything he can. And then now his White House counsel, he attacks him with everything he can. Where does it end?
Well, no, the difference, I think, between Cohen and McGann would be that first Cohen testified one thing, and then he had his fallout with Trump, and then testified something else. So his credibility is really rocky. McGann, his testimony and his comments are within the public parts of the Mueller report, and for him to elaborate on that, I mean, I as far as protecting his attorney-client privilege, I think that ship has sailed and he's free to talk.
All right, let's go to the story of the Supreme Court to decide whether landmark civil rights law applies to gay and transgender workers. The Supreme Court announced on Monday that it would decide whether the Civil Rights Act of 1964 guarantees protections from workplace discrimination to gay and transgender people in three cases expected to provide the first indication of how the court's new conservative majority will approach LGBT rights. Libby Post.
Well, you know, when I first read this, there was a part of me that was like filled with dread. And then there's a part of me that's sort of hopeful because I'm sort of hopeful because this court, led by John Roberts, has already been branded as being under the thumb of Trump because of Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. And if Roberts wants to have any kind of brand for this court as being an independent judiciary, they'll do the right thing here.
Meaning this would be a case to do it in?
This would be one of those cases to do it in and to finally settle the issue of whether or not lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender people can be fired purely based on who they love, because that's what is at issue here. So it will remain to be seen. I think if they didn't want to have to come down on the right side of this issue, they wouldn't have taken it at all.
I agree.
You know, what's the upside for them to continue discrimination against LGBT people where in another court a few years ago they said we could get married? It just doesn't make much sense. So yeah,
it's an awfully big risk, but should it go the way that you're hoping that it goes and that they do affirm the rights of LGBTQ people as being protected under the 1964 Civil Rights Act, if they do that, that would just end the issue. It would change society the way the Civil Rights Act did in 1964.
And
Mike, that's very helpful.
Mike Pence's head will blow up. That's the other thing.
Yes, right.
Well, I mean,
it'll still be an issue, but it will really put it way on the side.
Right. It'll settle the issue of, does religious freedom mean license to discriminate? Because that's what the rhetoric is. People are saying my pure existence is an affront to their religious freedom and that they should be able to discriminate against me because my existence is against what they consider to be their interpretation of the Bible. And this will stop that.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has said the 1964 Act does guarantee the protections. The Trump administration has taken the opposite position, saying that the landmark legislation that outlawed discrimination based on race, religion, national origin, and notably sex cannot fairly be read to apply to discrimination based on sexual orientation or transgender status. Mm. Do we know what that rationale is?
About that it's not?
Yeah.
Yeah, the rationale is that we're not real people, that we shouldn't be protected, that it's not a protected class.
What it would be is if the court went with the Trump administration on this, it would just basically saying that LGBTQ people are not full citizens.
That's right. We're second-class citizens. Yeah. Right. That's exactly it. And that we don't deserve to have protections because we're freaks.
Well,
it's just that simple. It really is.
First of all,
how they see it.
Yes. We have to go because the governor's on line one.
Okay. Well, hello, governor.
he may have a few things to say about this.
Yes. And actually, I would be interested to see what he has to say.
Libby Post, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain, thank you all very much for being with us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Alan Chartok will be on with the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. We'll be right back right after this.